myself, Nishant Singh, have come up to record Thomas Hardy's Far From the Madding Crowd. And you will be listening my voice till this book or the contents of this book. So, first of all, let us move to our general introduction of this book, Far From the Madding Crowd. General introduction. First, life and character of Thomas Hardy. On June 2, 1840, Thomas Hardy was born in a lonely and silent hamlet of Higher Bockhampton, Dorsetshire, situated a miles away from the town of Dorchester. This town was situated within walking distance of a small working community consisting largely of agricultural peoples. The surroundings of the village of Hardy were certainly not happy, and it would be misrepresentation of the environment of Hardy's childhood if one recreates it in idyllic terms. The working people lived in the most abject conditions, of which Hardy must have had the first-hand knowledge, and in which went a long way in determining the sort of thinking that is revealed in his important novels. On the parental side, the family of Hardy descended from the Jersey Lee Hardys, who had arrived at Dorset centuries ago. Hardy once entertained an idea of calling himself Thomas Lee Hardy, but never did so. Though his father came from the long-established Dorset families, he was not privileged to enjoy the ancient status. Nevertheless, he rose to become a builder, employing a number of labors which placed him in the better ranks of the society. Hardy's father was also a gifted amateur musician, centering his musical taste on the church services. On the maternal side, Hardy was Anglo-Saxon, having descended from the Childses, the Sweatmans, and other families of Northwest Dorset. His maternal ancestors were small landed proprietors in Mulberry, Osmond, Dorset, and adjoining parishes. Hardy's mother was an omnivorous reader and had a great liking for singing songs. Thomas Hardy was a fragile child. He was too funny at the time of birth that he was declared dead by the attending doctor. Had it been not for the common sense of the nurse, who slapped the child Hardy till he was restored to life, he might never have come to life to create immortal works. Such a fragile and reserved sort of the boy lived his childhood amidst the rural sights and sounds of the beliefs and superstitions of the country folk. He got accustomed to local speech. His father used to speak local dialect to his labors and standard English in the home. An interesting incident of his time is worth mentioning here. At the age of about 10, Hardy experienced his first love affair, though strictly in a Shelleyan sense. It was with a lady, Mrs. Julia Augusta Martin, more than four times his age. At the age of 8, Hardy was sent to school, village school, to learn the rudiments before being sent to more advanced schools. Interestingly enough, he was the first pupil to enter into new school building. At this stage, beside learning arithmetic and geography, he was made to read by his mother such works as Dryden's, Virgil, Johnson's, Rasselas, and Paul and Virginia's, and a popular illustrated history of Napoleonic Wars, which later on became responsible for the creation of the trumpet major and the dynasts. At the age of about 12, he also read Shakespeare, Scott, and Bunyan, as well as such popular novelists as Dumas and G.P.R. James. At 15, Hardy was sent to learn French from a lady who was French governess at the school attended by his sister. But when he was 16, the question arose of a profession. As a builder, his father was associated with Mr. John Hicks, an architect and church restorer. After thinking the possibilities of Hardy adopting various professions, Hardy was apprenticed to John Hicks, who had his office in Dorchester, and thus architecture was to be Hardy's main concern for the next 16 years. At the time when he was acquiring his training in Hicks' office, Hardy continued pursuing his self-studies in literature and classics. Earlier he had learned a little bit of French and German, now he began studying Greek and classical authors and the New Testament, reading laboriously for 2 or 3 hours before breakfast and daily walk into Dorchester. During the period of his training in Dorchester, Hardy became intimately acquainted with the country life of Dorchester, which he was to immortalize in The Return of the Native, Far from the Madding Crowd, and other novels. Besides this, his architectural training went a long way in shaping his literary skill, exerting a creative and disciplinary influence on all he wrote. He succeeded in acquiring quite a wide store of knowledge, though his own efforts. His self-study enabled him to have a sound acquaintance with classical and modern languages and literatures, history, theology, philosophy, science, and art history. His subsequent writings bear a witness to his immense knowledge of all these. After completing his training with Hicks, Hardy moved to London in 1862. To join the staff of a well-known architect, Arthur Bloomfield, who was himself deeply immersed in literary and musical taste. Here, too, Hardy did not give up the use of his pen. After trying to become an art critic, he took upon his pen to writing of a poetry. But on account of his ill health, he was forced to return to Dorchester in 1867. By now, he had begun to consider poetry was a waste of labor. Therefore, he decided to switch over the prose, which he considered a more promising field. Consequently, he wrote first novel, The Poor Man and the Lady, of his own. It is said that his decision to turn to novels sprang from necessity rather than choice. Perhaps the successful careers of Dickens, George Eliot, Poe and others suggested to Hardy that fame and fortune could be earned only by being a novelist. His first novel was, however, never published. When Meredith read its manuscript, he suggested to Hardy either to rewrite the novel or to write another one. Hardy opted for the second, and the result was Desperate Remedies, his first surviving novel, published in Tinsley Brothers and Hardy's own expense. For the next few years, Hardy pursued his architectural career, but his leisure time was still devoted to his practice of fiction writings. Desperate Remedies was received with mixed reactions. It was reviewed as a powerful novel in such critical papers as Athenaeum and the Morning Post, but Hardy's concentration was entered on an idyllic account of the surroundings of his own liking. Shortly after the aforesaid reviews was written, Under the Greenwood Tree, a village love story exhibiting Hardy's deep knowledge of rustic life and speech. The publication of Far from the Madding Crowd, which followed the popularity of Under the Greenwood Tree, established Hardy as a novelist of growing reputation. The novel was written with the encouragements of Leslie Stephen, editor of the popular magazine Cornhill, in which Far from the Madding Crowd was published in installments. In the meantime, in September 1874, Hardy married Emma Lavinia Gifford, a lady whom he met in Cornwall while engaged on church restoration business in 1870. Their marriage was to prove a source of joy as also of pain and bitterness, ending in her death, all spread over the span of 40 years. The hand of Ethelberta appeared after far from the madding crowd. It was less successful than its brilliant predecessors. However, Hardy made it up in his The Return of Native, in which once again he returned to his coveted rural scene. It was followed by three minor novels. The Trumpet Major, a short historical novel showing Hardy's deep interest in the Napoleonic period. Second, A Laodicene, a novel dealing with the hazards to which authors and publishers of serialized fiction exposed themselves. And third, Two on a Tower, a novel appearing in an American magazine, The Atlantic Monthly. But Hardy earned a more popular image in his later years, during the time that all the aforesaid novels were written. Hardy and his wife lived in resented houses in London and Dorset. At last, he decided to build a house of his own liking and design, for which he selected a spot on the outskirts of the Dorchester. The decision was important, as his coming to settle at Maxgate saw the production of his four great novels: The Mayor of Casterbridge, set in Dorchester, for which Casterbridge is the fictional name. The Woodlanders appeared in the monthly Macmillan's magazine. 10,000 copies of its first number were sold immediately, but a greater sensation was created by the publication of Tess of the D. Ubervilles. It was more widely discussed than any other novel of Hardy. By this time, Hardy was generally recognized at home and abroad, and was one of England's leading novelists. Jude and Obscure was his last novel, which, like Tess, was subjected to mixed reactions. After Tess and Jude, Hardy thought of giving up writing fiction. Perhaps after earning a lot of fame and money, he wanted to write for his own personal pleasure instead of doing a job for his publishers, reviewers, and editors. Naturally, he switched over to poetry. His first volume of poetry was Wessex Poems, published in 1898. Beside this, his other poetical works was Poems of the Past and Present, 1902, Time's Laughing Stocks, 1909, Moments of Vision, 1917, Late Lyrics and Earlier, 1922, Human Souls Far Fantasies, 1925, and Winter Woods, 1928. In 1910, Hardy was consequently honored with the Order of Merit and Honorary Fellowship of Oxford and Cambridge Colleges, but the death of his wife in 1912 was a setback in his life. Though his family life was one of bitterness, he felt the loss of his wife poignantly. The sense of loneliness compelled him to marry again in 1914, Miss Florence Imlay Dugdale, his former secretary. Untiringly, Hardy continued writing and produced some of his finest works in his old age. But by this time, he was run down by weakening health. On 11th January 1928, he breathed his last and was cremated at Westminster Abbey.